ॐ भरताय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कृतितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्ब त्वामनुसन्धामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणी. युक्तकर्मफलं त्यक्त्वा शान्तिमाप्नोति नैष्टिकिम् अयुक्तकामकारेण फलैसक्तो निभज्यते. युक्तः कर्मफलं त्यक्त्वा शान्तिम् आप्नोति नैष्टिकिम्. अयुक्तः कामकारेण फले सक्तः निभज्यते. Yuktaha is the karma yogi. Yuktaha karma yoga, yuktaha the one who is joined or who has nishtha in that karma yoga. Take yuktaha, the one who has control of their senses, the one who is committed, that's the yuktaha. Yuktaha, karma palam tyaktva indeclinable past participle. Karma pala, the fruits of the karma, so karma palam tyaktva, having given up, tyaktva, abandoned, having given up the karma pala, shantim apnoti naishtikim. That karma yogi, that yuktaha, gains, apnoti, gains, obtains, shanti. That shanti, which is naishtikim. Naishtikim is another form of nishta, which has for its nature, the shanti, which has for its nature nishta. Means there's clarity, there's resolve, there's firmness in that shanti. It's not a shanti that comes and goes. Okay. So if you say a person has nishta, means their shanti is naishtikam, means their shanti is firm. It's not something that is fluctuating, that is just coming and going as the shanti of a samsari. So take shanti means peace or well-being or wholeness or fullness. In samsara, when everything is going well for you or it's a peaceful evening, or you fulfilled the desire, or for some whatever reason, everything is just fine in the environment and your mood, etc. There's a momentary shanti there. Momentary means it usually doesn't last for very long. It can be a long moment or a short moment, but it's a moment. That's not nice. That's not the naishtika shanti that we're talking about. It's a shanti that is born out of knowledge or born out of the attitude which comes from knowledge. So here the shanti for the yukta, for the yuktaha, for the karma yogi, that shanti is the shanti born not now. We're going to take it both for the karma yogi and for the jnani. Because that firmness of peace that's born for the karma yogi is the one who recognizes this whole creation as Ishvara, recognizes that you, the karta bhokta, you still have a sense of doership. You still have a sense of enjoyership. There's still desires that are rising in your mind. You're still a part of this creation, right? You are in relationship to Ishvara. But your attitude as being an individual in this creation is the attitude of a devotee to the Lord. Devotee to the Lord means that I see this whole creation and all of my experiences, all of the prarabdha that is coming my way as Ishvara. I see everything that comes my way as Ishvara. And then what is important to me is my relationship to Ishvara in terms of everything that I experience. If you take all of the prarabdha karma that unfolds for you as Ishvara, then your relationship to the prarabdha karma, the karmas that brought you into this world, is your relationship to the Lord. So, just as if you were at the temple going to a puja, and then receiving the prasad from the Lord. In the same way, that's the prasada buddhi, in the same way you're receiving your prarabdha, you're receiving the life, your life, from the Lord with that same prasada buddhi. That's the whole idea for the karma yogi. And so then what happens is the whole creation, this whole manifestation, your relationship to it, your relationship to Ishwara in a practical manner, is your relationship to Dharma. In other words, what is important to you, if your relationship is to the Lord, if your relationship is to Ishwara, how does that manifest in terms of your value system or in terms of what you choose to do? It manifests in the form of Dharma. It means, here's the situation, which the situation is Bhagawan, right? And how do I relate myself to that situation? I relate to the situation as a yajna. Yajna means that as a ritual or as an offering. This is the offering. I'm relating to it as though it were a yajna. And so what is being called upon me dharmically? What are my duties in this situation? What is right for me to do in this situation? What is Bhagawan's icha? What is Bhagawan's will in this situation? What is harmonious with Ishwara in this situation? That becomes my value. That becomes what I want to do. Right? Becomes what I want to do. This is an important thing to understand. With this teaching, I recognize that the ananda, or the wholeness that I've been seeking to gain in the world, really has nothing to do with the world at all. It is my very swarupa, my very nature, this me, this self. Its swarupa, its nature, is the wholeness, the well-being, the completeness that I seek. And actually what takes the mind away from the enjoyment or recognition of that wholeness is pain. It's pain which is caused in the mind. Okay? The pain that is caused in the mind competes. It can compete. Just like pain that's caused in the physical body can compete. Right? It can draw my attention to it. Pain in the mind also draws my attention to it. What resolves the pain in the mind? What activity or what action resolves the pain in the mind? You can say dharma. Now, you can say dharma in terms of my relationship to the world gives me shanti. Dharma in reference to my own antakarana, in reference to my own buddhi, in reference to my own emotions, that also gives me shanti. So you have to think, when we say dharma, you have to turn that dharma both externally to how you are in the world and internally to how you are with all of the inner parts, the inner beings, right? Where's Tibby? Is Tibby outside?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. We'll let this see if she can stand it out there for long. Okay. I'll try. So it's a dharma that's turned externally and internally. We could say like this then. It's a kindness that's turned, ahimsa, a non-injury, that's turned externally as well as internally. It's an attitude of friendliness or friendship that's turned externally as well as internally, an attitude of care. When we see, go ahead, get into the 12th chapter, Bhagawan will kind of talk about all of these attitudes that are just natural to Dharma, natural to your own swarupa, really. When you're not in pain. So what allows us to resolve any type of pain in the mind is that dharma that manifests, human manifestation of that dharma, we can say is ahimsa, non-injury, friendliness, care, compassion, wanting to help. All of these qualities that are natural to you when your mind's not upset. So now, all you have to remember... that's so helpful to remember is that the upset mind also needs to be the recipient of those qualities. The hurt mind needs to be cared for, your hurt mind that can be acting out. So that mind also is part of the creation. And that all mind also needs to receive that friendliness, that friendship, that care, that ahimsa. So if the buddhi, if your understanding is 360, means it turns it, is facing outward as well as inward, right? Then the whole creation, including your upadhi, your body, mind, sense organs, then gets the rewards, right? Gets the pala of that karma yoga buddhi, that prasada buddhi. So the prasada buddhi, there are no exceptions for it. Right? It's easy for us just to understand that in terms of the world, but we often don't include the entirety of our upadhi, right? The body, mind, sense organs, our moods, emotions, in the world. The buddhi has to include all of it, including your own mind and sense organs and your own moods and emotions. It needs also to be a recipient of that prasada buddhi. And when that is there, there's a shanti which is, has, this is karma yoga buddhi, still. It gains a shanti which is invariable. It's not a shanti that comes and goes. Because the attitude itself is based in knowledge, and it's the that attitude which is, the attitude itself is not something which comes and goes. If the attitude were to come and go, then to that degree the shanti comes and goes. But once a person has that attitude, has that value, and the attitude is based in knowledge, then that attitude brings a shanti which doesn't come and go. And that shanti blesses the world, which is bound by change, and blesses the manas, blesses your own mind and moods and emotions, which are also bound by change. But the shanti is what is holding it. That's the key. You know, the shanti, or the calm person, the person who has dharma, the person that wants to help, that person is turned toward the world and as well as toward the your own mind. And so here it says, yuktaha, the one who has this karma yoga buddhi, who has shama and dhamma also, the shama and dhamma, means that the mind, the buddhi is the knowledge that you have, the understanding that you have, the buddhi, is stronger than the manas. It's stronger than the mind. It's stronger than the emotions. It's stronger than the complexes. And you can watch as you mature in the light of this knowledge that your buddhi becomes stronger and stronger and stronger in the light of this knowledge. And that ability to be dharmic externally and internally increases and increases and increases. It increases as the mind itself recognizes the fullness and wholeness of your own being. As that becomes more and more of a fact, aparoksha, direct and immediate for the mind, then sitting home in that shanti, the mind experiences the world in this way. Now, when we get to that level, if I want to say level, not exactly level, that naishtikim shanti is the shanti born of jnanam. Like there's a karma yoga buddhi that has to do with seeing everything as Ishwara, and then my behavior in the world is one of dharma. And that brings about a shanti in my buddhi. Peace, an inviolate shanti in the buddhi. But then my mind recognizes the naishtikim shanti, which is the swarupa, the very nature of the atma, the very nature of your being. And that shanti is inviolate. That shanti has nothing to do with the shanti of the buddhi. That shanti is the shanti of the atma, which is always there, no matter what the buddhi is doing, no matter what the manas is doing, no matter what Ishwara is doing, what the creation is doing. All of the whole creation, including my body, mind, sense organs, is taking place in that naishtikim shanti, which is the atma, which is my own self. So that never ever comes and goes. So there's two, this is twofold, really. You have The Karma Yoga Buddhi, which sees everything as Ishwara and everything as and that Buddhi as Prasada Buddhi, toward the creation as Ishwara, and what is paramount for me as a Karta Bhokta, as a doer enjoyer, is Dharma. That's what pleases me, is doing Dharma. I'm not after satisfying desires so that I can be happy. Because I've recognized my own Swarupa as the source of Ananda. And so in order just to gain the Antakarana Shuddhi, you know, what is important for me to do, as long as I have this Karta Tvam Bhokta Tvam sense, let me do my Dharma. Let me do what is really called upon for me to do in the situation. And that gives me Shanti in my Buddhi, in the mind. But that mind recognizes that both are exposed to this teaching, you know, all the way through. But that Buddhi recognizes a Shanti that has nothing to do with the mind. It is the very self of the mind. Right? It's the very Swarupa, the very Atma, which doesn't come and go at all. And the mind recognizing that Shanti, that wholeness, that fullness that never changes, no matter what the mind does, that Shanti is the Naishtikam Shanti of the Jnani. Right? So one is from the Karma Yoga Buddhi, and one is the actual knowledge, the Shanti born of knowledge, which is the recognition of my own Swarupa. And so he says, so in, you take this both ways, either as the Karma Yogi or as the Jnani. Having given up the fruits of the action, Karma Pala, that's why we're looking at first as the Karma Yogi. How do you give them up? You recognize Ishwara as the Karma Pala Datta. You take everything, means the giver of the fruits of actions, and you accept those fruits of action as prasad. Right? That's the Karma Pala Tyaktva. Going after a Karma Pala, you go after it as a Karma Yogi, you go after it, but you accept the results as prasad. Or, if you're not being pulled by a desire, everything is just done for Dharma, and you always accept whatever Bhagavan is giving you as prasada buddhi. So that's for the Karma Yogi. Karma palam tyaktva, giving up the fruits of your actions, you recognize the Atma is never a doer. The karma, the karta, bhokta, that all resolves. So either way is fine. Karma palam tyaktva, shantim apnoti naishtikam. The Karma Yogi and then the Jnani, they gain that naishtika shanti. Okay? Then, ayuktaha, the person who doesn't have that Karma Yoga Buddhi, kama karena, brought about by kama, desire, pale saktaha, attached to the pola, being attached to the result, being driven by the desire, the person who's not ayuktaha, who is pale saktaha, pale is the locative, sakta governs the locative, pale saktaha, that person attached to the fruit of the result of the action, because kama kata, being driven by the desire, nibhajyate, that person is bound. Right? So the saktaha, the one who's attached to the fruits of action, that person nibhajyate, that person is bound. This is where this is the difference between jnanam and samsara. You know, what causes a person, let's look at this. The Atma, yourself, is not a samsari. The Atma has never been bound, doesn't need moksha. In fact, jnanam, knowledge is, when you gain knowledge, is the Atma, yourself, is liberated. It always has been liberated. It has no need of liberation. Liberation and bondage are totally irrelevant to it. The Atma is whole and complete and always has been. It's the mind that is suffering from bondage and in need of liberation. But the liberation that the bound mind requires is a liberation born of knowledge, right? It's not a liberation born of action. It's a liberation born of knowledge that makes that mind recognize that the self of the mind, the very being of the mind, is liberated. So that's the jnanam. But until that knowledge takes place, the mind is seeking to gain that experience of wholeness. The experience that I am fine, that I am whole, that I am complete, that all is well with me. In other words, the mind is seeking to gain myself, but seeking to gain myself in terms of the experience of who I know that I am. And what I mean by that is every time for samsari, every time for samsari that you fulfill a desire and all is well with me, you will think, this is me. This is how I'm supposed to be if I could only hang on to this. You know it very well. You know, this is perfect. This is me. Why do I always lose it? Why do I always lose myself? And even when you're feeling that you fulfill the desire and you feel everything is right with me, there'll be a sadness because you don't know how to hang on to it and you feel like it's slipping away. That's the state of samsara. And the reason this takes place is because there is no viveka. There's no differentiation between the state of mind and the self. No viveka. And so your experience as a samsari is that I am sorrowful. I am agitated. I am depressed. I am unhappy. I am alone. I am isolated. All of the dark feelings that a person will get whenever their desires are not fulfilled. In other words, if you have a desire that says, you know, I need this to be happy, and then something happens and thwarts that desire, then the mind becomes upset because you had superimposed your happiness on the object, and you don't get the object, and then the mind becomes upset, and then you say, I am upset. There's no viveka, there's no distance between yourself and the state of mind. And all you know for samsari, all you know to do is to change your state of mind. That's the whole thing. I need to change my state of mind. And how do I change my state of mind? I change it by fulfilling a desire, right? And so the desire will cause me to go after a karmapala, because I believe that by gaining that karmapala, then I will become okay. I will become happy. Everything will be fine. If this would be like this, and you know, we can make them very complex. You know, if this has to happen, and then if this would happen, and this would happen, then I'll be fine. This would be wonderful. Then I'll be a happy whole person. My life will be great. Everything will go well.
Sure.
The problem is solved. So, well, this is how I go about building my life. If I could just fulfill this and get rid of that and get rid of that. I'm trying to manipulate the creation through the fulfillment of desire so that I can have an experience of myself. And then I can say, ah, this is me. This is how I'm supposed to be. I've made it. All of this is driven by desire. And desires are externalized. I need this in order to be happy because I've had the experience that when I fulfill a desire, at that moment, I will feel happy. And it's true. You fulfill a desire and at that moment, you feel happy. Because at that moment, your mind is desireless. Right? When you fulfill a desire, at that moment, your mind doesn't want anything. When your mind doesn't want anything, it's shanti. It's a shantivritti there. And that shantivritti, there's no competition. There's no anxiety or agitation or hatred or jealousy or depression or anxiety being manifest at that time. And since I have no distance between myself and the vritti, the type of thought, it's very important what is manifest in my mind. If agitation is manifest in my mind, I am agitated. If depression, I am depressed. If sorrow, I am sorrowful. Because there's no distance, right? And so I need to fulfill desires in order to get rid of these experiences so that I can say, this is me, this is who I am, this is how I'm supposed to be. Because you can say that because for the moment, no competition with any of these other negative states of mind which you have no distance. Right? So whatever the state of mind, I am that. That's samsara. And so now, the ayukta, they are bound. Such a person is totally bound, right, by the karmapala. Right? Because of the attachment to the karmapala, you feel bound because you have to produce, through the fulfillment of your desires, you have to produce these shantavrittis in order for you to feel whole and complete. You're bound by that because it's not okay to not feel whole and complete. You know? If you say, and we're talking in reality here, if you say, it's not a good language to say, oh, I don't feel whole and complete. Like you could say, I know I'm really whole and complete, but my mind is upset. It's all right. That's not what we mean. We mean, I am not complete. I am not whole. I am not a happy camper. I am not a happy person. Now, you ask, is that okay?
No.
Say, no, it isn't okay. Ajnani can, because there's distance between the mental experiences, the emotional experiences, and my being, if the mind is upset, the buddhi can come in and say, that's okay. Right? Because holding the upset mind is the atma which is not upset. Right? Holding the upset mind, holding the agitated mind, holding the unhappy mind, right, is an atma which is not unhappy, which is not agitated, which is not upset. That's the viveka, right? And so the karma yogi has a distance because of the buddhi, because of the attitude. The jnani has even more of a distance. And by distance, I mean space. There's space. The space of my being, which has been differentiated, right? The nature of my being, which has been differentiated from all of the vrittis. And the buddhi is able to help those vrittis, help those agitations or hurts. Because those agitations and hurts are taking place in a self which is not agitated or hurt or unhappy. A jnani can never say, even if the mind is acting up for some whatever reason, for a funny thing going on, the jnani can never say, I am sad or I am unhappy, because the atma is not unhappy. You can say this, my mind's upset. But that's much different than saying, I am upset. You know? I'm irritated or agitated. It's much different for a jnani to say that, as though there's never going to be a sense that I have become irritated or agitated. The mind may be going through something and you care for it. Yeah? But there's a distance there. The ayukta, the one who has no karma yoga buddhi, no jnanam, that distance is not there. And that's what causes the sense of bondage. Because when you say, I am unhappy, or I am hurt, or I am incomplete, or I am isolated, you're not kidding. That is the real experience. And that's the experience that we call bondage. Okay? So, let's go to the next verse. Sarva karmani manasa, sarva karmani manasa, sanyasyaste sukhambashi, sanyasyaste sukhambashi, navadware pure dehi, navadware pure dehi, naiva kurvan nakariyan, naiva kurvan nakariyan, sarva karmani manasa, sanyasya, aste, sukham, vashi, navadware, pure dehi, naiva, kurvan, nakariyan. He says, Shankara introduces this, yes to, yahatu, paramartha darshi saha. The one who's whereas the one who paramartha darshi, the one who is a seer of the paramartha, Paramartika means the Atma, who has this knowledge. So that one who knows, who's a seer, who has this knowledge, what about him? He says, Sarva karmani manasa sanyasya aste sukham vashe. All karma, sarva karmani manasa, by the mind, sanyasya, having renounced, in the conjugal past participle, sanyasya, like tyaktva, but sanyasya, because there's a preposition, it takes the ya, sanyasya. So having renounced, sanyasya, sanyasya, having renounced manasa from manas instrumental by the mind, sarva karmani, accusative, all karmas. Having renounced all karmas, accusative plural, sarva karmani manasa sanyasya, aste vashi sukham. Vashi means that one who is together. Vashi is the one who has everything under their control. The manas is under their control. The upadis are under their control. So vashi, that person, aste sukham, sits happily. Aste means sits, remains. Sukham, happily, naturally. Remains, sits happily. That one, having renounced all of the karmas, sarva karmani, sanyasya, aste, sits, sukham, adverbial, sits happily. Vashi, that one, vashi, not from vashin, from nominative singular. Vashi means the one who has everything under their control. Navadware pure dehi. That dehi, the one who indwells, dehan, deha means body. Dehi means the one who is in the body, the one who has a body. So that dehi, that one who has a body, which is quite different than being the body. So the dehin is the indweller of the body. So the one who indwells the body, the one who is in the body, what does he call the body? Navadware pure. In the city, the dehi, the one who is in the one who is indwelling, in the puri, in the city of nine gates. So puri is also a word for body, but it also means city, pure. So in the city, which has nine gates. The nine gates are two eyes, two ears, two nostrils, so 2, 4, 6, 7, mouth, and then the two organs of excretion make the nine. That's what they count for that. So this city of nine gates, right? The one who indwells that. So when we say the dehi is the one who indwells the body, the one who has a body, who is there resting comfortably in this nine-gated city, right? So that just gives you that gives you the space to understand it. It's a lot different for the samsari. I am the body. I am the nine-gated body. It's not that I am in this body, or that I have this body, or that I am resting. That is the Atma. I am resting, abiding happily, right, in this nine-gated city, as the akarta abhokta, not doing anything. So having given up all of the karmas, having renounced all of those karmas mentally, manasa, by my mind, manasa, jnanena, by my knowledge, right? Mentally means what? By my knowledge. The sarva karma sannyasi, the jnani, who is a sarva karma sannyasi, means the one who has given up all karmas, sarva, all karma, right? Sarva karma sannyasi. We say the jnani, one who has self-knowledge, is a sarva karma sannyasi. Has given up all karmas. Impossible to give up all karmas, except through knowledge. To realize, aham akarta, I am the akarta, myself, and I am free from any action. Aham abhokta, I am free from any doership or enjoyership. This body, mind, sense organs, all mitya, all part of maya, they're all part of Ishwara, the mityatva. Myself, the atma, I have differentiated, I have recognized my own swarupa. My own nature is totally akarta abhokta. I'm not a doer, I'm not an enjoyer. Nothing changes for me at any time. But this body, will always be doing. Right? This body will always be changing. The mind will always be changing. The sense organs will always be changing. The universe will always be changing. Bhagavan's this manifestation of knowledge, this entire creation, of which your body, mind, sense organs are a part, will always be engaged in activity, will always be doing, will always be enjoying. How can I say, I am a Sarva Karma Sannyasi? I am somebody free, totally free from all karma. Because I recognize myself, the one sitting in this nine-gated city, happily sitting, aste, remaining there, resting there. Akarta, abhokta, doing absolutely nothing, absolutely free. I recognize myself. I am a sarvakarma sannyasi. I'm not saying the body is a sarvakarma sannyasi. The mind is not a sarvakarma sannyasi. The sense organs are not a sarvakarma sannyasi. My jnana, my organs of action, my sense organs are not that. That's all part of Maya. That's all part of Ishvara. But am I that? That's the thing. Are you that? If you recognize your own Swarupa, then you are Sarvakarma Sannyasi. So Manasa, by your knowledge, by the mind, you, having given up all of these karmas, you rest happily as yourself amidst all of this. That's what we're doing in the meditation today. Recognizing my own, the changelessness, the fullness, the wholeness of my own being, which nothing touches. My thoughts don't touch it. Touch it means change it. Alter it in any way. My feelings don't change it. My thoughts don't change it. My perceptions don't change it. My body doesn't change it. I rest happily there. Ast sukham aste. I remain there. Sukham. At ease. Fully. Happily. Wholly. Nothing disturbs me in any way. I, the dehi, resting in this nine-gated city, you know, I sit happily without any disturbance, having given up all of the sattva karma, having given up all of the karmas as belonging to Bhagavan. So he says, Navadware pure dehi, as a dehi sitting in this nine-gated city, kurvan nakaryan, naiva kurvan, never doing anything, kurvan, present participle from krit to do. Kurvan. You haven't learned the krit, it's an eighth gana. So kurvan, not doing, nakaryan, causal. Not doing anything, nor causing anyone to do. I neither do, nor I cause somebody to do. They say nakaryan because when we say sitting in the nine-gated city, right, they liken the Atma, the Dehi, to somebody sitting in the nine-gated city. And they use the example, just like a king, you know, sits in his city, having everybody else, ordering everybody else to do. He himself doesn't do anything. Sometimes the Atma is likened to that. But then he's causing other people to do. Mm. And so then that analogy doesn't work. He's maybe not doing anything, so you can understand it, but he's making everybody else do something. Mm. So here, he's not a king like that. Nakurvan nakaryan, neither doing nor causing anybody to do. The Atma is free from any type of change or manipulation or motivation. It doesn't do anything, you don't do anything, nor do you make anybody else do anything. You could say, I don't do anything, but I make my mind think. I don't do anything, but I make my eyes see. No, I don't do anything, period. I don't do anything, and I don't cause anybody to do anything. That's the nature of the Atma. Non-dual. There's no manipulation, there's no change. So when you recognize your own being, yourself, sitting happily in this nine-gated city, you can ask yourself, in meditation even, you can ask yourself, do I do anything? Can I do anything? Do I have any arms or legs to do anything? The Atma, yourself. Here my mind is thinking, but am I thinking? My mind is thinking, my emotions are feeling, but am I participating in that? Am I orchestrating that? I said, no, the Atma is much too simple for that. Your being is much more too simple for that. It's undivided. It's whole. It's non-dual. It's not manipulating or participating in that way at all. Yourself as you are, you always have been, you always will be. No amount of antakarana shuddhi or lack of it is going to change your swarupa. No amount of purity of mind or impurity of mind is going to touch your own being. Impurity of mind causes pain, pure for the mind. The Atma illumines that pain. The Atma is the changeless self of that pain. The mind, we work through your problems and whatnot, and the mind gains shanti. The Atma is the self of that peaceful mind. But the Atma isn't becoming pain, full of pain, nor is it becoming peaceful. It's always exactly the same. And when the mind recognizes that, it has a stable home. It's a home that it can't change, it can't destroy, it can't make less, it can't make more. It is whole and complete. So I, as I am whole and complete. Nobody can do anything about it. I can't do anything about it. I can't make it better. I can't make it worse. And neither can you. So that's the great, great freedom, because the very nature of your swarupa, your very nature, is absolutely, can't be better than what it is. And that's something for the mind to recognize. In fact, in meditation, it's a good meditation to just, as you're sitting there quietly with your own being, you just ask, can I improve? Can this being, my being, be improved? And then you try to figure out some way, something to add to it. It's not possible. It's not possible to improve it or to make it better than what it is. Because to do that, you would have to change. You would have to become someone else. You may want your mind to become something else. You might want your body to become something else. But you want to be. You want to be. You don't want to die. The core of yourself wants to be. And that's the ananda. That fact is the very ananda swarupa of yourself. Okay, why don't we stop there?
Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namah Harihi Om.
This beingness is actionless and doesn't cause anything to have action.
Mm-hmm.
And its nature is luminosity.
Consciousness.
Huh?
Yeah, consciousness.
Consciousness, yeah. Is that a form of doing or activity, this lighting up the eye of the eye and the ear of the ear?
No, because consciousness is not doing an action to be consciousness. Right? It's not consciousness of something. It's just consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we use the example of the sun, if no example is perfect, but the sun isn't doing anything. It's not performing an action to light up the world. Because it's luminous, the world gets lit up.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But it's not doing it on purpose.
It's just
its nature. It's its nature. Right? And so it's not performing an act. So consciousness is not performing an act, oh, let me light up the creation. It is consciousness, and because it is consciousness, everything is luminous, but not because it's performing an action. And it can't be otherwise. It's not going to say, oh, I think I'll be consciousness now, and tomorrow I won't be. I'll be conscious in this direction and not conscious in that direction. There's not a choice there. But there's nothing but consciousness.
And that is timeless, that just sticks.
That is timeless, yeah. That is it. That's the reality.
Mm-hmm. So you can sense that now. I mean, you know that you're lighting up.
You can recognize that as you're being now.
Yeah, because it illumines all your sense organs in your mind and everything. I
mean, and itself.
And itself.
It is self-luminous, right.
Nothing lights it up. It just...
It is the light.
The presence.
Yeah. It is the light. You know, you can say, if you think of it, consciousness is the consciousness. There's no other source of consciousness to come in and make it consciousness. Consciousness is the very being that is. It is what is. Consciousness is what is. There's not something else lighting it up. Then it would become an object. If there's something else lighting it up, then there would be some consciousness lighting up consciousness. See?
But the mind in its wakeful state is the receiver of it and can comment on it.
That's right.
When it's sleeping, it doesn't comment on it.
That's right. But it's known, right? When the mind is awake, it's talking about, oh, look, I'm an object of consciousness. I can differentiate myself from the consciousness.
Mm.
Right? When the mind is in unmanifest condition, then that deep sleep is lit up, but the mind itself is not functioning. So it can't be commenting. When you're in deep sleep, the mind is in a resolved condition. So it can't say, oh, look, I'm deep sleeping and I'm not aware of anything, because the faculty that would be commenting is an unmanifest condition.
Mm-hmm.
So when you wake up again, the mind is now awake, then it can comment on its prior memory of its prior experience, which was the deep sleep experience. Then it'll say, oh, when I went to sleep, when I'm asleep and I don't remember anything, I don't have any duality, there's no experience of duality, so I don't know anything at that time.
Mm-hmm.
It has a running commentary about its memory of that experience.
Mm-hmm.
But when the mind itself is in unmanifest condition, it can't comment. It's in its own causal state.
But it can also not comment on that prior memory and say, oh, I wasn't there to comment, but consciousness was there. It can't say that either. It doesn't know anything from anything.
The only thing about that is you can say, you wouldn't say that you were dead, you would say that was your deep sleep, not somebody else's. And also, there's no sense of gap in terms of your own being, because there's no sense of time. See, when you're in deep sleep, there's no passage of time. So there's not going to be a sense of any gap. And then, of course, in the dream, there is passage of time. And so you feel more comfortable with that, right? Because there's duality. And even though sometimes in dream, there's duality because there's the manifestation of a scene that you're experiencing. But there's no, you may not have any body, taken a body or form in that scene. You're Ishwara. This is important to realize, that it's fine for you to be Ishwara, of the Ishwara of your dream. You don't even think of that as weird. You would think that you don't have a body and you're just the whole creation when you're dreaming. People worry about being not embodied, but in fact not being embodied and just being Ishwara is as natural to you as being embodied, because of course it is you. That is much as your reality, or more so really, than even being embodied, because in reality you are the whole. Right? Yourself, the self that you are, this me, your own presence, is Ishwara. That self is Ishwara. There's not two selves. And so this manifest creation is the manifestation of the self that you are.
Mm-hmm.
So this creation is as much you as this body, mind, sense organs. You are as much the whole as you are the individual. Because in reality, you are the whole. In reality, the very self that you are is the self from which this whole manifests. So this creation is as much you as this. This is, in fact, a part of you. But this body, mind, sense organ is a part of you.
I think I have a false expectation of this presence of beingness, thinking that it should always be conscious that it's there.
Well, the thing is that once that differentiation is clear, your own presence is stable.
Yes.
There's no coming and going.
Yes.
So, nor is there any coming and going of that recognition. Your mind doesn't have to be walking around saying, I'm aware of the self, I'm aware of the self, I'm aware of the self. It doesn't need to do that. It needs to remove the ignorance which has caused it to take itself to be the mind, and then the self-shining of your own being is the constant.
Uh-huh.
Right? And that doesn't come and go.
Uh-huh.
In fact, it never comes and goes at all.
When I go to sleep, I don't even know it's there.
Yes, but see what you're doing, when you're saying
because that, I would expect that still the consciousness would be, it's self-evident, saying that, and knowing its own presence. I would think that the presence would still have a knowingness.
It does. But now, let's look at this a little differently. When your mind goes into deep sleep as opposed to dream, okay, so we've got waking, dream, deep sleep. When the mind is in deep sleep, at that time, there's no marking of time, right? So it's like, except because there's a semi-consciousness there of your, it's not a deep sleep, you're as though sleeping, but you're aware of your body and you're breathing and there's activity going on in your mind, so that's not really deep sleep. Deep sleep, it's like if you open and close your eyes, because there's no marking of time. If there's marking of time, then the mind is awake, right? But if there's no marking of time, then there is no before, during, or after in reference to that moment of deep sleep. So there's nobody, no time there. There's no recognition of time for you to say that I had a period of non-being. You look at the clock, right? You look at the clock and say, wow, I was asleep for 8 hours and I didn't know anything at that time, right? But all you're really saying is that you didn't have an experience of the world at that time, during that time. And you're like, well, it was for 8 hours. I had no experience of the world. Right? I wasn't thinking. I wasn't feeling. I wasn't experiencing the world through my sense organs. Right? But there's no break in your being. There's a break in perceptions. But even then, in terms of time, there's no break. Even in terms of perception, it's just like closing and opening and closing your eyes. That's why, you know, if you've ever had anybody here ever had an anesthetic?
Sure.
Yeah. Very strange. Very strange. They give you the, this is real deep sleep. They give you the injection or whatever and start having you count backwards, and then all of a sudden, you open your eyes and the surgery's over. That's what it is. It's very weird, okay? Because there's been the whole mind is shut down completely. There's no marking of time at all. We're not used to that, and because in deep sleep there's all the semi-awaking.
Well, would you? And I'll let that go right now after this. Even when you have this deep sleep and the mind's not available,
yeah.
I'm still expecting the Brahman to be announcing itself as that it's whole and complete.
What you need to do, I think, to make this really clear is, first of all, yourself is not a knower. Like right now, at this moment, your presence is simply the me is to simply
it's
here.
It's knownness.
Yeah, and the me-ness.
It's a me-ness.
Okay. Yeah, the yeah. Knownness.
Yeah.
And it is whole and complete.
Mm-hmm.
That is its own experience. Now, if you're looking for vritti ananda, different mental thought modifications that are different forms of bliss, it goes from hellish forms of agitated states up to blissful forms of the mind. Those are states of mind. That's not the wholeness that we're talking about. That's not the ananda that we're talking about.
Okay.
We're talking about the ananda that is me, my being, that never fluctuates in any way. It's not performing. It's not announcing itself because it's already totally announced. It can't be any more announced than it is. So that's why the mind has to recognize what that means. It can't announce itself because it is the very self, the entirety of all experience. It's already totally, fully announced. Mm-hmm. You can't bring it more forward.
But I think I follow what Edward is saying, so I used to have the same question, is that if that is what it is, then you should be able to distinguish that. You know, it should be a very vivid differentiation of when you're awake, you say, oh, here is the mind and me. However, when I'm in deep sleep, my mind is not there, it's only me. So that part that was there when I was in deep sleep, that was the me that I should be able to
distinguish. No, I'll tell you why that isn't so. Because when the mind is in deep sleep, the mind is in causal condition. Mm-hmm. So now you have awareness plus ajnanam still.
Oh, so
there's awareness plus
ajnanam.
Yes, so when the mind wakes up, it still has the experience of its own ajnanam plus the self. So otherwise it's going into samadhi.
If you had deep sleep without that ignorance,
That's samadhi.
That's samadhi. Oh.
See, look. There's two states of mind here, and they're kind of close to each other, right? One is I go to sleep. That's why Swamiji jokingly said that's lazy man samadhi. Okay, I go to sleep.
I love it.
Because sleep is very blissful, right? Because the mind is an unmanifest condition. There's no problems. It's just pure ajnanam, one big I don't know anything. No experience of duality. But the mind is still... They're in an ajnanavritti. Now, when the mind is awake, and just like in deep sleep, I've withdrawn the mind from all perception of duality. I've withdrawn the sense organs, say I've done japa or whatever, and I've brought the mind into a state of quiescence, of shanti, quiet. But now, say if I just hold it at that, now I have my awareness illumining a quiet mind. Still looking out, but it's quiet. Mm-hmm. But now I take that. But there's no ajnanam there. It's just, there's no unmanifest mind. There's just the silent mind.
It's not asleep.
It's not asleep, but it's a silent mind. Now this silent mind, I turn it toward the subject, the awareness. Mm. And now what I have, instead of awareness illumining just like a sheet of glass, a quiet mind, I have a mind illumining the quiet mind, which itself is focused on awareness. So the content of that quiet mind becomes awareness. Before the content of the quiet mind was quiet, was silence. That's what was its focus. Now its focus is on the awareness itself, which is the silence. The awareness itself is silence. But it's the silence that is present to both silence and sound. Mm-hmm. Right? It is the silent awareness is the silence that illumines the sound. Right? But it's also the silence that illumines silence, the silence that illumines sound. So that awareness now is also absolute silence, but it's the silence that's pervasive to sound and silence. So when the mind focuses on that, the mind is awake. Right, it's not in its unmanifest condition, it's awake. Right? That's what we call samadhi. Because now it's not awareness illumining ajnanam, pure ajnanam, which is the causal condition of the mind. It's awareness illumining a mind whose content now, right, is only awareness. So there's no other, there's no intervening factor. Now for jnani, once that ajnanam, that ignorance has been removed, right, through knowledge, then whatever the mind is illumining, you know, or whether it's a deep sleep or it's awake or it's thinking about this or thinking about that, I recognize my change, myself. I know myself amidst all of that. I can differentiate. But until you've recognized yourself, you're one with that experience. Right? Once you differentiate it, then that you is there no matter what the vritti is. But that different, you know, once you've done that, then you don't need to do that because now yourself is obvious, whatever the vritti is.
So when you die, you won't have that ignorance coming at you that you get in deep sleep.
No, why would you?
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you were saying at some point, and I wanted to just get some clarity about that. You said the jnani has more space than the karma yogi.
And I'm in inner space, you know, the space of differentiation.
So can you
The karma
illuminate
yogi.
That a little bit more?
Yeah.
What the space actually entails?
Okay. Well, let me just explain why I use those words.
Okay.
If just now, forget as a jnani, just as a karma yogi who hasn't really recognized fully myself. Okay. But then the buddhi, right, has a relationship with Ishvara and has a relationship also with the manas, with my mind. So that, say, for instance, my mind is in pain. The buddhi has differentiated itself from the mind.
Mm-hmm.
That space, that differentiation, rather than being identified. Say the mind is in an emotion. The emotion is one of hurt. The buddhi is overwhelmed by the mind. There's no space. Then the buddhi itself says, I am hurt. Then when it says, I am hurt, then it can't be with the one who's hurt.
Mm-hmm.
When it can be with the one who's hurt, that's what we call space.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, that term of space, that's something that Winnicott, who's a great famous psychologist, has used this transitional space. And so psychologically we understand that Swamiji now uses the term also. It means that I have a relationship. For instance, the buddhi has a relationship with the mind rather than being the mind. That's the space
mm-hmm.
that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in reference to jnanam, there's a space. I have space between myself and everything, whether it be the buddhi, right?
Mm-hmm.
The buddhi, the thoughts, the decisive thinking, the one who has knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
I have the space between myself and the buddhi. Because no matter what the buddhi is thinking or feeling, I am always the same. Right? No matter what the buddhi is taking care of the mind. So there's space between the buddhi and the mind. Space between the buddhi and the world. Buddhi is in relationship to the world. But I am always the same no matter what the buddhi is doing. So there's space between, for me, between myself and the buddhi, between myself and the manifest creation, between myself and everything, because nothing ever touches me. Nothing. So always I have that space. For always I am free. No matter what the buddhi is doing or not doing, no matter if the buddhi has himself forgetfulness or is behaving badly or whatever, the manas is taking over, all of that, no matter what is going on, I am free because I myself has been differentiated, that ajnanam isn't there.
So that's a jnani.
Yeah.
But the karma yogi doesn't have that space.
Karma yogi is getting that space.
So it's working up to that space.
It's working up to that space.
So the karma yogi more has a space and then he loses the space.
Because
yes. He gets like the mind and the buddhi gets entangled again.
Really the recognition that sattva karma sannyasa of my own self is not complete yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so there's still that knowledge is coming, but it hasn't seen it yet. So that doership and enjoyership is there. But what protects that is that karma yoga buddhi, that prasada buddhi, where I see everything as Ishvara, and I know how to be in the world as a doer enjoyer, as I'm gaining this knowledge, and that doership and enjoyership resolves in time with knowledge. Right? Say you come to this, the student comes to this teaching, they are not a jnani right away, right? You come, and then this unfoldment is taking place from this angle and that angle, and this. It goes on for some time and you keep seeing and you keep seeing and then sometimes then you get it. But all the while that you're getting it, you're also understanding this karma yoga buddhi, how to be in the world with this knowledge. Now what attitude really brings about the shanti, the peace that allows my mind, gives my mind space to really get this knowledge and in the meantime to be gaining antakarna shuddhi. A peacefulness of mind, just by my way of relating to the world, even though I have still that sense of doership and enjoyership, how to be in the world with that as I'm getting this knowledge. in a way that resolves the problems. Because the Karma Yoga Buddhi is very close to what to the jnani. It's very little, it's just a little slip. Very short, little distance between the Karma Yogi and the jnani.
But it can take a long time, that slip.
It takes as long as it does.
No, I mean, there's such a huge chasm, though, between, you know, because you can spend all your life being a Karma Yogi, and if you don't have jnana, you will never know why.
No. Remember, though, for Krishna,
yeah.
that the Bhagavad Gita, the Karma Yogi and the Sannyasi, both, right, are gaining this knowledge.
Well, they're preparing, preparing in mind.
No, it's more than that. The Karma Yogi is preparing the mind until that mind becomes the mind of a sannyasi. But whether the Karma Yogi or the sannyasi can live a life, sannyasa lifestyle. You live a Karma Yoga lifestyle until that Karma Yoga lifestyle naturally morphs into a sannyasa lifestyle. But either way, one has the sannyasa lifestyle or the Karma Yoga lifestyle, either has to gain knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not like, you have this Karma Yoga Buddhi without gaining knowledge.
No.
Right? It's the mumukshu who's gaining knowledge. And as what person is gaining knowledge, then practice the way your sadhana for gaining the antakarana shuddhi, which goes along with this knowledge, is this Karma Yoga.
Well, a mumukshu is a different kind of Karma Yoga.
No, the mumukshu is the Karma Yogi.
Yeah, that's my...
It's not that there's some other Karma Yogi out there.
They're kind of synonyms in a certain way, huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's not a Karma Yogi who's not a mumukshu. If you're using it that way, that's all right. But that's not how Bhagavan is using it in the Bhagavad Gita. That's the thing to understand. When we're talking about a Karma Yogi, we're talking about a mumukshu, a seeker, a jignyasu, somebody who wants to gain this knowledge. You don't gain this knowledge right away. You expose yourself to this knowledge and it becomes clear in time. You know, it's not one of these things, boom, you've got it. It's your mind has to understand. You have to recognize, you have to see it.
And so the sannyasi is also a mumukshu until you become a jnana yogi.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. The Karma Yogi and the Sannyasi are both mumukshus until they become a jnani. Mm-hmm. It's only the jnani that we use this term, Sarva Karma Sannyasi.
Mm-hmm.
Neither the Sannyasi nor the Karma Yogi gets this term.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because neither one, the Karma Yogi or the Sannyasi, have the body, mind, sense organs. The Sarva Karma Sannyasi is Atma. So the one who has knowledge, I am Atma, I am Brahman. That's the Sarva Karma Sannyasi. That requires jnana.
And then the reason that Bhagavan says to Arjuna that, you know, you can choose either one of these, but it's actually easier to take to be a Karma Yogi than a Sannyasi is because not everyone has the
because antakarana shuddhi. Yeah. Antakarana shuddhi. It's much easier to get the antakarana shuddhi if you're staying in the world within your field of experience, so that you're not suppressing, you're putting yourself into a situation where you can't really live out your life and work through your raga dvesha, your likes and dislikes and your needs and your desires. You shut all that down and say, no, I'm not going to do that. That's what Arjuna wanted to do. He thought, if I could just run away from the forest and get away from all of these problems...
The problems will go away.
The problems will go away. And Krishna says, no, the problems won't go away. You have to stay amidst the problems and outgrow these problems here in the middle. Otherwise, you'll run away and they'll just all be there in your psyche. And you won't have a field to resolve them.
And it also seems...
I just have a quick question, which is, totally unrelated. How does the term Maya relate to the term Nitya?
Maya is the word that we use for what is responsible for this manifestation of nama rupa, name and form. Mitya is the order of reality which Maya enjoys. Right? That's the difference. So say we say the order of reality for Brahman is what we call paramarthika satyam, absolute reality, that which can't be negated in past, present, and future. What is the order of reality for this manifest creation? Maya. Maya is the material, right, that is responsible for the projection of names and forms. The order of reality for this maya is mitya. Mitya is defined as sadasad bhyam anirvachaniya. Anirvachaniya means that which is inexplicable, that cannot be defined or categorized by either being sat real or asat unreal. That's the definition of mitya. So mitya has to do with the order of reality, whereas maya has to do with the actual thing that we're talking about, giving an order of reality to. So paramarthika satyam, so Brahman.
Mitya is a more abstract term.
Yeah, for the order of reality that something enjoys. So Brahman is the thing, Brahman, right? Which is sat, existence, sat-chit-ananda is Brahman. What is the order of reality of Brahman? Paramarthika satyam, that which cannot be negated in past, present, or future. This creation, what is responsible for the manifestation of names and forms? Maya. What is the order of reality that Maya enjoys? Mitya.
You said what is responsible for names and forms.
Manifestation of names and forms.
But isn't also names and forms also Maya?
Yeah, it is. So we say Maya is made of sattva, rajas, and tamas. Right, sattva is the intelligent principle, rajas active, tamas responsible for the physical names and forms. And so that whole maya is what's responsible for the projecting of all duality.
But isn't it also the projection itself?
Yeah, it is. It's both. But then what's the order of reality of that? Mitya.
Which is Ishvara.
Maya, Brahman with Maya is Ishvara. Ishvara is mitya.
Yeah.
Right? But Ishvara is mitya when you look at the manifest creation, but Ishvara is, the truth of Ishvara is Brahman. You can say if you want a word for the whole, it's Ishvara. Because the self of Ishvara is Brahman. Right? So the truth of Ishvara is Brahman. So you can say, what is the reality? Ishvara. What is the reality? Brahman. You just have to know what you're talking about, because really there is nothing but Brahman. When you say Ishvara, you're taking into account the manifest creation. When you say Brahman, you're just taking into account the Sat-Chit-Ananda, which is the very being of the manifest creation. So Ishvara, taking into account manifest knowledge. Brahman, taking into account just the substance.
So when there's a pralaya, there is no Ishvara. He just...
No, there still is Ishvara, but the maya is in samadhi, right? The maya is in, you know, pralaya means it's an unmanifest condition. You said it's not
he's
gone.
He's there in unmanifest condition.
He's there in nirvikalpa samadhi.
Lights illumines that.
Brahman never changes. So when the manifest knowledge is resolved, it's like nirvikalpa samadhi, because there's no manifestation there. But the maya is still there, but it's not manifest. Mm. Then the manifest knowledge is there, then we'd say the creation is there. So Ishvara is always there with the manifest creation manifest or with it not manifest. It's never not there. Right?
Well, does his state change? You say he becomes manifest and he becomes unmanifest?
No, I don't say like that. It would be... The creation becomes manifest, unmanifest. Manifest, unmanifest. The self doesn't become manifest, unmanifest. The Atma, Brahman, always is the same. Right? And so that Brahman, which is Ishvara, is either with the manifest creation or without the manifest creation. Right? With the manifest creation, then the creation is known. When the manifest creation is resolved, then it's just samadhi, it's just Brahman. Experientially. If you go into nirvikalpa samadhi as a jiva, there is no creation or mind that is being recognized. There's just you, just Brahman. Creation comes, or mind comes awake, right, then there's just you with the awake mind. Same with the creation. Creation is manifest, creation is known. Creation is unmanifest, then that's just nirvikalpa. Right?
And where's this entity, Ishvara, at that?
Ishvara is Brahman. You can't. Ishvara is not separate than Brahman.
It's not other than. I thought when the Maya resolved and the creation resolved, then Ishvara resolved with it.
That's not right because the self of Ishvara is Brahman. Right? The self of Ishvara is Brahman. And so the Maya is there in unmanifest condition. Right? And so it's so the Upadhi isn't there, but the self is there. And there's only one self.
Yeah, somebody's crying. Yeah. Or it doesn't sound very good.
Yeah.
No, it's
not. I was thinking the use of this word space.
Yeah.
And being sliding. Because really no distance and consciousness is pervasive. And that seems to me that's really what gives the sense of space is the pervasiveness of consciousness. I can recall having tried, just been misled by this idea which makes the mind try to separate itself from
try again. I got a little distracted by
yeah,
that.
Yeah, distracting. Just that it's misleading the word
space. Like if I say there's space,
mind tries to try to get a distance from something. And there's no distance. And that it's, to the contrary, what gives the sense of space is actually the recognition of the pervasiveness of consciousness, the fact that it pervades all experience. That somehow seems, from my experience, to give the sense of space. The sense of space, but paradoxically, as a result of recognizing no distance.
Do you mean like the sense? Like, for instance, in this room, there is space. There's obviously space between you and me. Space between that side and that side. There's that kind of physical space, in a way. And so I don't see that consciousness gives me the sense of that space. But I recognize that all of this space and everything in it is in consciousness. Right? But what gives the sense of space is the three-dimensionality, in other words, the distance between you and you and you.
What gives the sense of space for me is not being bound, the non-limitation. So the pervasiveness somehow, the pervasiveness, it pervades beyond the normal perception of oneself, you are beyond those limitations.
Yeah. Also,
it's the experience of being beyond limitation that gives the sense of space. But there's no separation. There's no distance. Sometimes I think.
Yeah. There's no separation. That's right.
To associate space with separation.
Yeah.
But in fact, no distance.
Yeah. There's no separation. There's no distance. That's right. Yeah. That's right.
And I just pointed out, because I think for a while for me, my mind was doing something where it was trying to
make a
because
distance.
Of the association.
Yeah, 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 yeah. That's right. That's true. That's tricky.
You said water bucket example, you know, I used to have the same thing with the
The water bucket example's a problem too, because the sun's up there and the water bucket's down there. And Yeah, every example has problems. Yeah. But that's good, yeah, that's right.
It's
a good one to bring
it
in.
I mean,
yeah, because there's nothing, no example that is the darshtanta. The drishtanta is the example, the darshtanta is the thing it's an example of. Well, there's going to be a difference. And there's always limitation within duality, always.
Right, you kind of try.
But so you have to keep pointing. You use these examples to point.
Well, the darshtanta is awareness, right?
Mm-hmm.
So.
But the thing is, our illustrations have limitations. And then we keep using different kinds of illustrations, and one illustration has to knock off the other the limitations of the other illustrations, like that. Yeah.
So you have to go to the essence of the illustration.
You do. The illustration has to resolve into the fact. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
But the space that you were talking about earlier, you were talking about one entity versus another entity, but those are both mental entities. One was the buddhi, which has
an identification with the manas, for instance. So then they become one, and the space is in the recognition, the differentiation,
right,
one with the other.
Right.
Same type of thing, in reference with the Atma. There's not real physical space involved, but there's a space that's brought about by differentiation. You know? Yeah. I just love this.
The problem is when you confuse the psychological space with space that has distance to it.
Yeah. I know. That's right.
But it's the same thing. It is the psychological space, right? It's what the therapist or the guru embodies, unless you're able to embody that for yourself. When you have, when you have a firm understanding, then you have that same space in your mind, right?
Yeah. But all of these things, like the difference between physical and psychological space and all of that, it's a useful, helpful term, but then we have to have these discussions about it that we're having right now. To make it more clear, you know.
But in a way, isn't that what psychotherapy does most of the time? Create differentiation?
Mm-hmm. It does. It just doesn't take it all the way.
Yeah, it doesn't take it all the way.
It doesn't take it all the way, but that's what it does.
But it kind of at least creates it on a personal level.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
And also this technique called focusing actually invokes a certain psychological distancing.
Yeah.
And it doesn't return at least some authors don't return the original, I think, the original sense of what the self is and what the contents of the mind and how they relate to each other, and that the space that is really being talked about has nothing to do with distance.
Yeah.
And they don't resolve that anymore. So.
Yeah. That's why it's nice for focusing and inner dialogue to bring in Vedanta. If you have Vedanta, you can take it further.
Yeah.
It's kind of what Marsha Rosenberg, is that his name? I think that's kind of what he does, right?
I think so, yeah.
He just... And then, you know, when you have a conflict, you know, and you're caught in this whole scenario of the conflict with another person, all you do is you just focus on what do you need. And that's kind of exactly that differentiation. You know, you're just recognizing the mind, the body-mind needs this, and then you can respond to that.
Yeah, all these things are helpful. They really help for gaining the Ashanti.
But it's all very, at the same time, it's kind of temporal.
It is, but that's why once you bring Vedanta in, it resolves it on a deeper level, and those same techniques become even very powerful and helpful.
Mm-hmm.